Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast with me, Sam Harris, your host. I invite fascinating humans from all walks of life to share their wisdom and unpack their mindsets and formulas for growth. On the show today, I'm going to be talking to Chris Howard. He's the founder of The Rattle, which is sort of accelerator for people in arts and music and creative industries who are either like independent artists but want to build like a business around their work, or startups doing stuff in like creative industries. And they really like build these companies and turn them into like good businesses. He's also started a few other businesses before this where he's raised a lot of money and went through like Techstars and other accelerators himself. So he's got lots of experience in the journey of starting a business and the different stages at which you should try and raise money, and just like the common pitfalls that people fall into, and just the different kind of mindsets and ways that you think about how to build your startup and when to raise money. So this is just a very condensed episode, just purely on like the different stages your business goes through and what stages you should like focus on to like capture money, and when you should put your head down and not think about raising money. And I just found this really insightful and just very different to like the kind of stuff that I'd really been told from some of the other places I've been with my own business, where people are just like constantly telling you to try and raise money when actually you probably are going to fail. And had I known the stuff that Chris tells me in this interview earlier, I probably would have wasted a lot less time trying to raise money at the wrong time, and my life would be better. And then also, just on a personal note, Chris is just an amazing human. I don't know how to say his like energy and vibe is awesome. And like, I basically invented this podcast to give myself an excuse to talk to like unusual and amazing people, and Chris is like just the perfect person where I'm like, oh my god, I don't even know what I want to talk to you about, but I just want to talk to you for like hours on end in an interview style. And I'm so grateful to have been able to do that with Chris. And so there will be some more episodes coming out of different short things that he gave me as nuggets of wisdom, and then like the whole interview, which was like a good hour and a half, will be available privately on Syncify if you want to listen there. But anyway, this is Chris on the stages to raise investment and the best tips that he has for that, and it's really, really useful.
There's very distinct stages when you're raising money or selling equity. And there's a whole bunch of data to back this up too from CB Insights and Harvard Business Review. But there's kind of three principal phases. The very first stage, if you imagine as a founder, I basically call the founder fit stage. And it's the period of time once you've solidified your idea enough to know what you're aiming for. So you know the who and why, and you know what it is that you're great at. And you have enough collective evidence as founders to demonstrate you're really fucking good at solving really hard problems or doing really hard things that your unique experiences apply toward. So when you've demonstrated that your past experiences and your skills have married together to do really, really hard things, that's when people can trust that the founders should be a fit for the problem that you're suggesting you might want to address. And so that's a beautiful time to raise money, because all of the burden of proof that you can carry their equity forward towards some good outcome is in things that you've already done. So when you're raising money before you've written a single line of code, had a single sales meeting, is actually a very successful time to raise money. So I do encourage anybody who's looking at investment as a way of growing a company to try and raise a round before they've started making the thing that they want to make. The worst case scenario is you build a good network. But the best case scenario is people trust that you're somebody to back early, you know, getting a lower valuation, higher risk, all those kind of things. And investors like myself love that stage. It's a really fun time to get involved in a project. Doesn't stop there, Sam. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Here we go.
Sorry for the second part.
So what a lot of people really struggle with is that actually, as you start making the thing that you set out to go and build, trust that you're going to build a company goes down, and you're like, what the fuck, why? You're saying, wait a second, I'm, you know, I've just chatted with some supplier, or I've just speaking to people who are going to use the app or whatever it may be. Why am I finding it harder to raise money as time goes by? And I will tell you why, Sam. The second you shift from using your past experiences to demonstrate your capabilities and start using what you're doing today, the only thing people care about isn't what you're working on, but what you've achieved with what you're working on. Fundraising is an outcome of you doing great stuff. It's not the thing that enables you to do great stuff, initially at least. And so good investors, they don't like to invest in people working hard. They like to invest in people who have achieved hard things. And it's a very different concept, and it really screws people up sometimes. So as you start coding, I don't know, your app, Netflix for curtains, confidence in your ability to build a company will go down until a really magical point in your journey. And it is what I call invention fit. So invention fit happens when you've created something where a user has used it and they've had their behavior changed to the point where they're going to come back and use it again. So invention fit is you've invented something that should fundamentally change the behavior of the people you care about in some beneficial way, either economically, socially, or just personally. It doesn't really matter. And one of my favorite examples for this is Google, believe it or not, because Google's founding mission isn't to not be evil, but they've got a few skeletons in their closet, so to speak. Yeah. But their founding mission is to empower the curious to have access to the world's knowledge. That's why Google founded. So they invented Google Search to change the way curious people gained access to the world's knowledge. They said, don't go on Encarta, don't go on encyclopedias, don't go into libraries, use the internet. Because at that time, when Google was establishing, the behavior of curious people wasn't to use the internet, because the internet was actually quite hard to use if you were just curious. And the example that I used to give is this, is in 1997, if you were to type into Yahoo, AltaVista, Lycos, all those search engines, who cares, and you typed in, what's the population of China, you'll get a really good answer. Like the page ranking, you'll get a really good answer. The first couple will give you the accurate answer. If you were to type in, what shall I have for dinner, you'll get absolute nonsense, because it's not what we call a resolved question. It's not a question that has a definitive answer or where the answer is in the question itself. So if you're curious, you were locked out of the world's knowledge using search engines. So Google wanted to change that. So they invented what they called referential search, which is basically rank things based on how popular they are, not on how accurate they are, and essentially changed the behavior of curious people to go and use the internet instead of going to their local library or whatever it may be. And so the first point that they had somebody come back to search again because they were curious, they had their very first advocate. And so that means their invention has fit the behaviors that they're trying to create. And that's the next point where an investor gains confidence that you, Sam, you will take them, their equity, to some kind of successful outcome at the very end, because they trust you. They look at what you've achieved and said, yes, Sam, you have changed behavior. Congrats, well done. You've made something of original thought using your skills you told me about last cycle to go in and create something original that changes behavior. You've invented something and it fits the behavior you're trying to modify. If you do that, you raise a seed round. Make sense?
Yes.
Amazing.
Today's sponsor is NordVPN, and I first used them when I had to interview the hitman on the show many years ago, and I had to go through the dark web to interact with various people online who you did not want to have any ability for them to actually track where you were or who you were. And you might not need to be hiring a hitman or doing any other weird dark web-based activities, but you might have a need for a VPN that is trustable and reliable and will hide your internet traffic from others so you can do what you want. Or you might want to do things like I now do, such as unlocking Netflix in different countries so I can watch what I feel like watching, or when I'm traveling I can still watch the BBC in the UK and things like that, which more normal people do, such as perhaps yourself. So check out NordVPN, because they are basically the best VPN.
As you go and raise money for your seed round, you go and tell everybody, you're like, hey, I got loads of users, they keep coming back. And excitement's going up and up and up and up and up and up and up. And you get like Sequoia involved, Index, you get kind of the most famous angel investors, you get Troy Carter himself coming in. And you're like, wow, I'm on cloud nine. And then all of a sudden, confidence will start dipping again. There's no real defined amount of time. It's all kind of ecosystem and psychology specific, dependent. But eventually, as you keep blathering on about how many users you're retaining, how many people keep coming up, or how many advocates keep coming back, the interest will begin to wane. So there's only a fixed period of time to raise money. So you need to kind of be attuned to that point in time in order to raise a good seed round. But then what tends to happen is that confidence thing becomes negative after some time again. And that's because you've been banging on this drum so long that people are now waiting for the next meaningful piece of evidence to suggest you're going to take their equity forward to some meaningful conclusion. And this gap crossed the chasm, some people have called it, the actual value gap. I don't fucking know, it doesn't matter. This kind of, if you imagine it like a graph, we're now going to the negative piece of the graph. This is the point where loads of companies die because they've invented something great, changes behavior, but what they haven't done is been able to understand what the commercial value was in changing that behavior. And sometimes it really isn't obvious. So going from invention fit to the next phase, product market fit, requires you to understand, if I've changed behavior, you know, as Google changed the behavior of curious people to start using the internet, you need to say to yourself, as a result of that behavior, what's commercially valuable? What solves a commercial problem? What has this generated, which if I put a price tag on it, somebody would pay for because it makes their professional or commercial life better? And so what Google did, they went, I tell you what we've got that's commercially valuable. We've got 10 million eyeballs on the same screen at any given point in time. And so they go, I'm going to make a product that packages up that commercially valuable thing and sell it. And so they made AdWords. It's pretty simple, right? Their invention, Google Search, their product, AdWords. So they invented a product based upon the commercial value created from their invention, and they packaged it up and they started hunting for the market. Like, who are the commercial humans that have a problem that they're willing to pay to be solved because they're either too lazy, don't have enough information and knowledge themselves, or just do not have the budget to create by themselves? So you create a product, you find that market, and you start selling it. This all depends upon your original invention continuing to change behavior because you're packaging up the commercial value. Think of the commercial value as like the kind of really lovely kind of byproduct of you changing behavior. It's very rarely the direct thing. And so Google, they made a product, they sold it, and you know you have product market fit quite simply when somebody has paid you for whatever it is that you've made and go, I gave them $3 and I came back with 10. Interesting. I'm going to go back and give them another $3 and come back with 10. I'm going to give them another $3 and come back with 10. That's product market fit. It's nothing more complicated than that. Somebody pays you for the product that you've made. It makes them more money than you take. And if that's successful, you have product market fit. And so it's the number of customers who return or refer is considered product market fit. Make sense?
Yes.
So, super quick recap. Very first fundraise, founder fit. Does your past experiences marry up to somebody who can do solve really, really hard things and build really impressive things based upon a core unique skill set? That's the first round. Second round, which is invention fit, is have they used those skills to invent something new and original that changes the behavior of the people they set out to support? If they can, it's a seed round. The evidence is how many users return or refer, or URR. The next fundraise is called product market fit, which is have they packaged up the commercially valuable thing as a result of changing behavior, turned it into a replicable product, and sold it to the point where somebody who buys it again. That's product market fit, and that's Series A territory, and that's the point where loads of VCs like to get involved because they say, hey, Sam, you're someone not only has a great background, you're also somebody who's invented something pretty cool that's changed people's behavior. And not only that, you've understood the commercially valuable thing and convinced somebody to buy it more than once. So I trust you might be on the path to making a business. You haven't made a business yet, but you might be on the path to making a business, my friend. And so that's when loads of people like to get involved and invest.
Yeah. Cool. As we've spoken to so many VCs and things that are kind of like Series A onwards and stuff, and you're like, why are we even talking to you? I mean, yeah. I'm quite far away from this right now. Which is funny. But yeah, that was really useful and just like a lot of clarity. And because I feel like I'm somewhere in like the pre-seed seed sort of stage, where, which is why it's sort of conflicting of when you're talking to people of like before Techstars, like we were definitely like at the founder fit stage, and that was like quite clear and like, okay, we have an idea, like I have the right background, yeah. I'm the right sort of person for this,
like I've got the whole like sort of ideas in the area. It made lots of sense. And then we're kind of at the point where like, okay, we've been hacking away for a bit. We've got some advocacy, but like the product, like we've only just got it out and people have just started using it. We kind of want to iterate on it for like 2 months to get it to the point where like actually we think people will be coming back and that we'd then have enough people whose behavior would have changed.
Yeah, yeah.
But that's still like 2 months away. And so we're kind of like in between the things, but people want us to be like 2 months ahead and actually have like 2 months worth of data of customers using it. And we're like, well, we literally just like had it like as an open beta like a week ago. Like I can't tell you how much traction there is because it's 1 week. And so yeah, it's a bit frustrating.
I totally get it. And you'll often realize you're speaking to the wrong investor when they're asking you questions in a stage that you're not in. If somebody starts telling me like, okay, tell me how you optimized your cost of customer acquisition. Mm. That to me is the stage after product market fit.
Yeah.
That's what we call business model fit. And that's where you do your Series Bs and Series Cs. Like if somebody asked me that, my very honest answer is, it's just not my priority right now. Like if I don't have a great product, then my business model doesn't matter. And if I don't have a great invention, then my product doesn't matter. So I need to make sure my invention is great. And that's where all my metrics are focused. I hope to, in time, take each successful step to produce the next one. And, you know, good investors or experienced investors, I should say, they respond well to that. They're like, yeah, okay, makes sense. Yeah, makes sense. Mm. Particularly if you're building a venture company, which is a company which is designed to be sold at the end of it. They understand that because you can be bought in your journey well before business model fit, well before product market fit at some point. Take Instagram, for example. You can be bought at any point in your journey. So it's all about being the most valuable version of your kind in each particular stage that you may be at. It's not about pretending you're a big company playing big company, even though there's only two of you and your pants in a shed. It's like, what's the point?
Yeah. Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is at growthmindsetpodcast, or follow me at samjamsnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.